We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari American, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Napa know-how. A Napa guy knows that by the foot, there's no better ride than an old station wagon. Room for six people facing forward, two people facing backward, and a whole lot of luggage, lumber, and bicycles haphazardly strapped to the roof. If you can parallel park that beast, you can park anything. And with some quality parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep your land ship running longer, stronger. It's not obsolete. It's a rare treasure. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Today, Bridget Griffin shared a video of her daily yoga routine, two self-help articles, and her new blog called Build Your Inner Bridge with Bridge. Girl, your sharing has turned into oversharing. No worries, Bridge. Geico has some info worth sharing with your 7 blog followers, like how you could save money on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim just by visiting geico.com. How's that for building your inner bridge? Bridge, Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use the promo code RotoWire when you make your deposit for a free contest entry today. So what's the deal with Venture Brothers? I mean, I've never got into it.
I don't know. It's awesome. It's just like a parody, but kind of also like a homage to like the speed racer Johnny Quest genre of cartoon, but instead of like, you know, whatever they are, it's less about like the racing and I don't know, crashing and stuff or whatever, and more about just irony and making jokes out of like the idea of villains and stuff. I don't
know. That sounds like Bill's Jets on a Thursday night, to be completely honest.
It also has that one guy from Seinfeld doing the voice of Brock Sampson, who's one of the very best characters in anything ever.
David Putty?
Like, yeah, this guy.
David Putty, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's definitely Putty. How far into Seinfeld are you, by the way? I know you were one of the late adopters of the show. Are you in season four?
I got to season two, and then I I got bored, but I got a friend's Hulu account, so maybe I'll start doing that again.
Well, yeah, I mean, at the very least, throw down before you fall asleep, and in like 3 years, you'll get
Seinfeld dreams. That's what's happening.
If I could pay money to dream in episodes of Seinfeld, I'd pay a lot of money for that service.
Can you guys tell we don't care about the Thursday game?
Doing everything in my power not to cover it, but I'll get it over with.
You got to take the shot eventually.
Basically, it's a root canal of a game. Bills 22, Jets 17. Let's roll through the quarterbacks. Tyrod Taylor went 17 to 27 for 158 at TD. Didn't throw any picks. That was the key in this one, really.
Tyrod.
He was sacked four times. I just like that he's their best option, has been their
he's
best option.
He's good, man. I like Tyrod.
Well, he can still get better. I mean, he's got so little experience that he's not a finished product yet at quarterback.
I just like that he breaks the template of boring, mediocre quarterbacks that we always see get starting opportunities when they don't deserve it, and he's finally getting the chance he should have had, and he's you know, not embarrassing himself like so many of those other goofs.
We're looking at you, Matt Castle.
Looking at you, Matt Castle. Blaine, despite the resurrection, looking at you, Blaine, et cetera.
Blaine Gabbert. Absolute worst. On the other side, Ryan Fitzpatrick, 15 of 34 for 193, a couple touchdowns, two picks. He was sacked once. Bills' defense played pretty well in this road spot, and I think the thing that stands out to me really are the two turnovers from Fitzpatrick. That was pretty costly in this particular matchup. LeSean McCoy looking very healthy, as he has over the last few weeks, 19 carries, 112 yards. Carlos Williams had 50 yards from scrimmage, including a 26-yard touchdown catch. Without that TD, it would have been a pretty disappointing night for a guy that many people were throwing in as an RB2, or at least as a flex option for this week.
Wait, this is Carlos Williams?
Yeah, people are treating him like that.
Wow, I guess I missed the memo on McCoy not playing, even though he did. Yeah, whatever. I missed that. I guess I'm glad. McCoy's obviously the lead guy.
Yeah, McCoy's going to get probably three carries to Williams' one in games where the Bills are winning.
Interesting thing in this game is Eric Decker never doesn't catch it. Or he never doesn't catch a touchdown pass. He'll always do it.
He's awesome.
He's really good, yeah.
Very underrated player. I always look at his price on DraftKings. It seems like he's pretty low week in and week out, regardless of matchup. Brandon Marshall had 10 targets, turned that into just three catches for 23 yards, but he did find the end zone. For the Bills, Sammy Watkins coming off a huge game on Sunday, targeted seven times, catches three balls for 14 yards, saw his share of Darrell Revis, so not a big surprise that he was quiet. Charles Clay led the way, 5 for 52 on six targets among Bills pass catchers. On the Jets side, also, you got Chris Ivory, 18 for 99 after the 1 yard per carry outburst over the weekend, hit a couple touchdowns in that game. Did not score last night. Also caught a couple balls for 36 yards. One quick thought I've had about Chris Ivory is that the Saints didn't really use him as a pass catcher, but I think that was largely because during Chris Ivory's time in New Orleans, they always had a back whose specialty was to do that. I mean, they had Reggie Bush, they had Darren Sproles, I think for at least one of the years Ivory was there. A handful of different guys that they mixed in that Pierre Thomas could always catch passes. So I think there's always the possibility when you have a back change teams like Ivory did going into, I think it was last season now, you know, they may be asked to do different things than they were previously, and I think he's proof of that. He's not going to catch 50 or 60 balls, but he's not Alfred Morris in the passing game either.
Right, yeah, and it's interesting that as soon as the Saints let him walk or they traded him, whatever, then they start using Kiri Robinson as a pass catcher. It's like, oof. And you'll give him the opportunity, but not Ivory. But I don't know. Ivory's getting hurt all the time. I guess maybe they were just trying to limit him in general.
No, but really, this game, I was not really expecting a whole lot offensively. 22-17, a lot of poor yardage totals. The backs doing what you expect. Decker having a good game. Marshall only having a good game because he scored. Everything else being pretty disappointing. So we're not going to spend much time on that today. I do want to start diving into injuries because there's a lot of them to get through. Latavius Murray practiced without limitations Friday. He's been cleared to start Sunday's game against Minnesota. Hey, good news. Concussions aren't that bad, apparently, at least this time for Latavius Murray.
Yeah, that's great. Fingers crossed that there's nothing shady going on with that. I guess the matchup might not be as bad as it looks with Minnesota having two beat-up linebackers, Anthony Barr and Kendricks, but Zimmer was saying they'd both play, so yeah, I don't know. That'll be an interesting test for an Oakland offense that has looked, you know, pretty convincing in the past month or so.
On the other side of that matchup, Teddy Bridgewater, who was knocked out completely in Week 9 on the field, is officially listed as questionable to play against the Raiders, although Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer said he has no doubt that Bridgewater will start. I'm not sure how Zimmer knows that, because Bridgewater has not passed through the league's concussion protocol as of the time of this recording early Friday afternoon.
I think Zimmer just knows he can say anything and no one can do anything about it. As long as the injury report isn't, you know, breaking the laws of the injury report protocol, he can just say, like, well, I bet he will.
That's the worst kind of law you can break.
Can't penalize him for saying, I bet he'll play.
Anything with the injury report, do not break those laws. Emmanuel Sanders missed practice on Friday with an ankle injury. Has not taken a practice rep at all this week. Seems like he's legitimately a game-time decision for that late afternoon kickoff for the Broncos on Sunday. That matchup is coming against Kansas City. The question I have for you, is there anyone else you'd like to pick up extra value if Sanders is forced to sit this one out?
Well, Demaryius Thomas would, I guess, like everybody would figure. He had 8 catches for 116 yards at Arrowhead earlier this year, but Peyton Manning being completely useless has had a noticeable effect on Demaryius Thomas's numbers, because he only has 1 touchdown and 61 catches. So DraftKings PPR, that's not as huge of a deal, but yeah, I don't know. I hate the Broncos, so I'm not. I mean, I hate their offense. Wade, we love Wade, but the offense is such a mess because of Manning and et cetera. Boring.
We were told by the lawyers that we cannot rename the podcast the @SonOfBum on Twitter podcast, which is kind of disappointing. Usually the lawyers give you bad news, so I wasn't that surprised when I saw the email from them. But I just want to let you know, we tried to rename the pod.
Please don't blame us.
Podcast. It's
not
our fault.
Please don't blame us.
The Demaryius Thomas lack of TDs, as bad as Peyton Manning has been, as poorly as Manning has played, it is surprising. I mean, 61 catches with 1 TD, it doesn't add up. I mean, if the Broncos' passing game still sputters the rest of the way, if they really don't make any sort of strides, I could still see Thomas getting, I don't know, 6-7 TDs over the final 8 games. I mean, it just seems really fluky that he hasn't been contributing in that area.
Yeah, I guess if you believe that the lack of touchdowns is basically just a statistical anomaly rather than like a you know, merited result based on Peyton Manning's play, then you could expect a progression to the mean going forward. I just have no faith in Manning, and I think he can, I don't know, I think he's been the tanking factor so far, and I don't see a reason why it would change.
To your point, last season, Demaryius Thomas had 39 targets inside the red zone in 16 games. This year, he has 7.
Oh, well.
It's a big drop.
Well, I don't know. Maybe, I mean, Emmanuel Sanders has 4 touchdowns. Maybe him being out would be just what we need for Demaryius to peel off 3 of them. Who knows?
Could be. I'm a little more interested in Demaryius Thomas this week, with Sanders at least banged up and possibly
That's
not
definitely
playing.
Reasonable. Definitely reasonable. And he's not expensive, $7,400.
Things I never thought I would have said going into the season. We are anxiously awaiting further details about Allen Hurns. We may have to wait until just before kickoff on Sunday to know for certain. But he did express some optimism regarding his status to play against Baltimore. He's got a questionable tag after going through the walkthrough on Friday. Hurns is dealing with a foot injury that he suffered on the final play of that game against the Jets on Sunday. I mean, Hurns, I kind of expect him to crash in a James Jones sort of way, but he's been holding more targets than Jones has had over the last few weeks. He's scored in 6 consecutive games, at least 6 targets in each of his last 5, 8 in back-to-back games. Now, if he plays, it seems like his role is actually becoming pretty safe.
Yeah, he's convincing to me, and it seems like the Jaguars have a reliable target funnel between just the two Allens, and I don't know if Julius Thomas will eventually get in on that, but they're throwing the ball quite a bit, and like Bortles might be turnover prone, but he's creating just enough yardage and touchdowns that it's like I feel like the Allens are going to just stay hot the rest of the year, because the defense is never going to be good enough to stop teams from giving them a reason to throw. And the Allens are good, man. Like, Allen Robinson is going to be a top 10 receiver, I think, and Allen Hurns is a lot better than I expected too.
Marquise Lee is listed as questionable to play in this
Who
one.
Who cares?
I do care, because his offensive coordinator once compared him to the albino tiger at the zoo, based on how rare it is that you actually see him. So that's kind of it's a funny comparison. Like, once you get the full context, out of context, I could see where that might bring some heat. Nevertheless, Marquise Lee actually practiced a little bit in a limited capacity Wednesday, Thursday, and then practiced fully on Friday. So he did more this week than Hurns, and yet I'd be in no way surprised if Hurns played on Sunday and Marquise Lee didn't.
That tiger thing is just confusing me. I'm like wrecked for the next 5 minutes. I can't give you any thoughts.
Are you Googling albino tiger right now?
I'm just considering like the full implication of what that means. And like, maybe there's a burn in there somewhere. Maybe this guy actually has a low opinion of the, okay, well, never mind.
I think he started, I don't know, maybe he took his kids to the zoo like a day or two before and they were like disappointed they didn't see the albino tiger.
He just wanted to use albino tiger in a sentence really bad.
Yeah, like he just learned about them at the zoo the previous day and then practice came along. They said, how's Marquise's hamstring? And then he just decided, like, I got to drop this albino tiger knowledge on these reporters. Otherwise, they're going to think I'm a chump.
Maybe he already used the reference like five times that day beforehand and everyone thought he was just stupid and ignored him.
So he just kept trying. Almost
he
like
finally hit one where people were like, hey, that's cool. That makes sense.
Kind of like Ron Burgundy with the when in Rome, how he never seems to know how to apply that. Perhaps that's what happened.
Probably.
With the albino tiger situation. A couple other injuries we're tracking related to the Broncos game. Peyton Manning, foot injury. He's expected to start. Who's using Peyton Manning right now in daily and season long anywhere? Like what conditions exist in places where Peyton Manning is being used?
I have him in an NFFC league where I have to rotate him with three other quarterbacks.
Oh, you're going with the Ohio State?
Pretty much. Situation? Because, I they're all bad. It's not good. I drafted Sam Bradford and Peyton Manning back-to-back in the like sixth and seventh rounds, and I thought I was so smart.
I thought I was pretty
smart.
I really
believed
those drafts, too, and I'm looking like an idiot yet again. Who'd have thought that would happen? It's only happened every year I've played in those leagues. Those are hard leagues, but they're a lot of fun. Dez Bryant is listed as probable for Sunday's game in Tampa. Just wants some mother effing respect, I assume. But he's okay after missing time.
Dez is always right. I am I'm sick of seeing on TV people talking about it. Like, no one cares about Dez getting mad about journalists. No one cares about, you know, like it's just like an endless TV media thing of like, our feelings are hurt. Dez should say something nice to us. Like, no, he shouldn't. He should keep yelling at you.
Dez should hire Stone Cold Steve Austin to come issue Stone Cold Stunners to the reporters asking the questions.
Yeah, it's like, don't misquote my man Dez unless you're ready to get some fire in your face like that. Like, you gotta just stop poking him. God, just leave him alone.
It reminds me of the time that T.O. called Ed Werder a liar. Remember that?
I do. I can't remember why, but I don't know. I'm all in favor of Dez just unleashing his anger at the people around him who keep prodding for whatever reason.
Even though it's not the same voice, when I hear T.O.'s quotes in my head, it's Allen Iverson's voice that I hear.
This is complex.
I don't know why that is. I know they're not the same voice. Like, I know there's a difference.
They're just very different in a lot of ways.
Oh, totally. And then when T.O., the one where he was crying, talking about Tony Romo and how that was his quarterback, I hear Rod Tidwell. I hear Cuba Gooding Jr. from Jerry Maguire in my head because that seems like a scene from that movie. It seems so fake.
You know the South Park episode about the Tooth Fairy where Kyle thinks too long about Descartes and other philosophy books and stuff and reality suspends and ceases to exist? That's where I'm at right now. I'm like floating through different galaxies. It started with the albino tiger thing, but this T.O. Iverson, Cuba Gooding thing is what pushed me beyond sanity.
Yeah, I'm not even done. We're only about 16 minutes in. Steelers got a couple banged up players. D'Angelo Williams should be fine. He's got that foot injury. He laughed earlier in the week when somebody asked me if he was going to play. The injury is being described as foot inflammation. It seems like sharing carries with Jonathan Stewart for several years has actually been some kind of preservative for D'Angelo Williams. He looks really good right now.
Yeah, he should have another big game with Roethlisberger out. I mean, I guess it could be offset by the lack of vertical explosiveness, but, I mean, how does he not get 30 carries this week?
The other thing, I think he gets the volume for sure. 25 seems like a really good target. 30 definitely seems within reach because they don't have anybody else to give the ball to.
There's nothing left in that offense. Like, it's those two receivers, Heath Miller and D'Angelo Williams, and you can't get more than like 60 snaps out of those four.
You're not going to run Jordan Todman, that's for sure.
Or maybe they will.
I hope they don't. Ben Roethlisberger, we expect him to be out, but he was limited at practice again Friday. I don't know if this is a Mike Tomlin a way of messing with Mike Pettine. I don't think messing with Mike Pettine seems all that difficult. But
I mean, Roethlisberger is, I mean, whatever bad things that are true about him, he's a really competitive and really tough football player. So I'm sure he's always like, you know, barely able to walk and like, I can play, coach, kind of person. But I don't think they're going to let him play. I don't know. I just, because they got the bye week coming up, I think. So
yeah, next week the Steelers are off.
Yeah, and they're playing the Browns. Like, come on. Just beat the Browns, you guys.
Yeah, if you filtered away the character issues and the brain damage, I mean, Ben Roethlisberger does seem like a likable athlete, but it's I don't apply those filters, you know? No, it's not going to happen.
I don't know. I don't know if he's likable, but he's
not. He's not one of my guys.
He's a really good player, but yeah.
Anyway. That's what I'm saying. Like, you have to strip all these extra things away and then be like, oh yeah, we like his competitiveness, and you know, he's the face of our franchise. Well, he is those things, but he's also other things that people kind of have forgotten about.
It's amazing to forget. Like, they were really close to just getting rid of him back in the day. Like, they were trying to move him, and then it's like, yeah, it's funny how we forgive certain people for certain things.
Dallas would have been there because they would have found
him. Oh, man, if he went to Dallas, he would have never been forgiven. It would be the exact opposite of right now with where he is in Pittsburgh, where people just kind of seem to have forgotten. It would be like, we can never let this go away. not to say, like, the Greg Hardy thing doesn't deserve the attention it gets. I just think it's stupid how people are always like, oh, Jerry Jones is some kind of unique villain. It's like, no, the whole league would be doing that if they had the guts Jerry Jones does. Jerry Jones just doesn't mind playing the villain. Like,
yes.
It's a system that allows a Jerry Jones to exist.
And I read an article, it was from one of the Packer beat writers. I feel bad for not knowing which one. I know it came out maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago now. And it was an article about how the Packers are willing to look past character issues too, because every single team, to varying degrees, will look past various character issues to get a discount on talent. And of course, in the case of Greg Hardy, it's extremely well publicized now. We saw the video, or the photos, I should say, more recently, and things like that. Like, that's higher profile, but there's other stuff that happens all the time with guys who have significant, not necessarily star roles, but significant roles on pretty much every team in the league. And I think there's this idea that, you know, it's worse in Dallas than it is in other places. Maybe on the spectrum it is, but the whole spectrum is shifted into the WTF side of, like, this is all messed up.
Right. I mean, the problem is, like, people, like, the Greg Hardy thing is, it's like, why did pictures need to be disclosed for people to care more? Like, did you not read the report before? Did you not believe
the Ray Rice video?
Yeah, like, it's like, we'll never believe the victims unless they have, like, a snuff film of what happened to them or something. But, yeah, I mean, like, I remember, like, anyway, I'm not going to go trying to name players who I thought were arrested for domestic violence, even though I could. But, yeah, one fun case study to monitor would be Joe Mixon at Oklahoma. He's a running back. He was a 5-star recruit, very, very, very talented player who will definitely be an NFL prospect. See how people handle him when his draft time comes up, because he just, like, completely annihilated some girl at some bar last year, like, broke her face, like, punched her really bad. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what happens, because the video of that was never released to the public. And no one's talking about it right now, even
but
though
it exists. The video exists. It's been reviewed.
I don't know if it exists. I don't know if that place, like, destroyed it or whatever. It was never released to the public, though. For some reason, media were allowed to see it. But yeah, it's like, no one talks about this when Oklahoma comes up during college football talks. And it's like, wait, do we care about this or not? Because if we care about it, like, are we not going to scream about this? Because I don't know. I thought it was shocking that he was put back on the team. But
I think the masses selectively care about it when it's driven by a narrative. Like, it has to be under certain constraints. Then we care. Otherwise, we don't.
Yeah, there's social opportunity in being like, yeah, I hate Greg Hardy and Jerry Jones because it's such a safe position. Like,
right.
No one wants to say, take away Oklahoma's. Like, what? Why are you talking about that, man? We're talking about Greg Hardy over here.
Oklahoma's a wholesome football program. We don't want to sully the good name of Oklahoma.
Yeah, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if that story comes back up in 2 years or a year, whatever it is.
I think that'll surface around draft time, at least as a footnote.
Well, what's his name? Frank Clark. Like, people got over that.
Yeah.
They were mad for a minute, but can't hold the attention span unless there's, like, I guess, the companion villain of the owner to go along with or something.
No, the Seahawks are cool, though, because Pete Carroll brings DJs to practice, and Russell Wilson seems like a pretty nice guy, even though he's, like, super excited about God and concussion water, so.
Oh, man. I want to say something about Pete Carroll, but I don't know if it's something we can say on here, so.
Well, we'll talk about it off-air, yeah. Then, and record that as a separate
safe to
pod.
Say, there is other hilarious stuff to say about Pete Carroll.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty. Speaking of the Seahawks, though, Marshawn Lynch is questionable with an abdominal injury for Sunday's game against the Cardinals. Somewhat concerning, since he was previously listed for non-injury reasons, especially since this is a game following the Seahawks bye week, so I don't really know what to make of that. It's particularly difficult because it's a Sunday night kickoff, so Thomas Rawls would be in line to possibly get some reps if this Lynch injury turns out to be anything serious.
Well, they had a bye week themselves, so yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's been listed as, like, probable / like non-participant for non-injury reasons for like 2 years now, so it's hard to tell when he's really got an injury, but I haven't been picking him all year. That won't change for me this week.
DeMarco Murray and Ryan Matthews both dealing with groin injuries. Both are probable for Sunday's game against the Dolphins. Eagles-Dolphins, one of the higher over-under point totals you're going to find on the board. I would expect you're going to have some interest in those guys as we get into our Millionaire Maker lineups here in just a little while. Looking for a few more injuries. Elshon Jeffrey returned to practice as a limited participant on Friday. He's officially questionable with a groin injury for Sunday's game in St. Louis. His teammate Matt Forte limited in Friday's practice as well. He is also listed as questionable. It kind of puts a damper potentially on the value of Jeremy Langford, of course, with the possibility that Forte is back. But Elshon Jeffrey, just as he was kind of pushing his way towards the top five among players at his position, has another soft tissue injury that he's dealing with right now that, even if it doesn't keep him from playing, could limit him at points during Sunday's game against St. Louis.
Yeah, non-participant until Friday, and then a Friday limited is never what you like to see, especially for a guy who missed a bunch of time already this year. Not that it's the same thing, but it's just like, I don't know. I have trouble putting money on stuff like that. I'll probably stay away.
So I got another news item here that I don't really think I believe, but we'll see if it holds up. Cleveland is expected to start Johnny Manziel in their game against Pittsburgh on Sunday. This is according to some sources at ESPN and multiple reports. Josh McCown hasn't been officially ruled out based on what I can tell. I'm seeing that he's actually questionable with a rib injury. But much like the Steelers, as we talked about a few minutes ago, the Browns still have their bye week coming up in Week 11. And just given how well Josh McCown has been playing, it's actually maybe a good idea to rest him for one more game before bringing him back after the bye.
Yeah, I don't know what to expect from Manziel, but obviously it seems like Pettin's committed to McCown regardless of what happens with this next matchup. But I guess I don't expect Manziel to do that well. Like, it seems like the Steelers' defense has been a little better lately, and it's just, I don't know, it's hard to have faith in Cleveland anything. But when Josh McCown gets back, the Barnage show is for sure full force.
The Barnage show, I've missed that the last week or so.
He's so good.
Jonathan Stewart has an ankle injury. He's probable, so not much to worry about there. He fully practiced on Friday. Kelvin Johnson did not practice on Friday due to an ankle injury, so it's possible that this was just a precautionary way of just getting him fresh for the game on Sunday against the Packers. He was able to practice on a limited basis both Wednesday and Thursday. I believe that's an early kickoff on Sunday, so not part of the late afternoon tiny block. So we should know what the deal is with Kelvin Johnson about 90 minutes before kickoff. RotoWire.com/pod and get a free 10-day trial. Check out the site. We get all the inactives as they come out. Get them posted up on the site as soon as we can. Other injuries, this is actually from the Thursday night game. We knew this was going to happen. Ryan Fitzpatrick did undergo surgery Friday to repair the torn ligaments in his left, that's non-throwing thumb, on Friday. He's expected to use the next 10 days to return week 11 against the Texans. In case he doesn't, Geno Smith actually would be kind of interesting against the Houston defense that's disappointed us pretty much all season long.
Wait, against Houston?
Yeah, it'd be Houston in week 11 for Geno Smith.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that would be interesting. I mean, I have some kind of out there, deep in space faith in Geno Smith doing something if he gets the opportunity, but perhaps being maybe not convincing character is what's going to keep him down.
A few other non-injury-related items. Wes Welker, apparently, according to Rams head coach Jeff Fisher, will be ready to play in Sunday's game against the Bears. I saw our colleague
this
Mike Doria.
This changes everything.
Colleague Mike Doria went after Wes Welker in our stake league and promptly dropped him so nobody else could own him, I guess. Or,
oh.
I don't really know what that was all about. If that was a defensive pickup or an accidental pickup or a habitual pickup or why exactly that happened. But, I mean, realistically,
seemed like a good idea at the time.
Do you see Wes Welker doing anything on this team? Nick Foles looks like the worst starting quarterback in the league to me.
I didn't mean to sound like so, I don't know, mean about it, but in a radio show I was just talking on, the word jester was what I blurted out.
You referred to Nick Foles as a jester?
No, Wes Welker.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Like they signed him to be a jester pretty much. Like look, it's Wes Welker. Oh, he's not going to do anything, but look, it's Wes Welker.
I bet Wes Welker can juggle.
Oh, I am just going to go ahead and assume he definitely can.
Was he juggling at the Kentucky Derby when he was on the Molly?
Can't juggle on Molly.
Is it impossible?
I don't know. You probably can. I don't know.
I don't do drugs. So I don't know. Not implying that you do. By the way, I'm just.
Oh, I'm steaming, dude. I'm mad about this. You'll hear from the lawyer I haven't hired yet. But yeah, I just assume he can juggle, and that's why they signed him.
Fair enough.
Funny hat, too.
Wes Welker probably would wear the Jester's motley. Like that's part of being the Jester is wearing the funny hat, and I think it's important to own that.
The fans are owed that much.
The Rams are the team. Every time I look at the NFL schedule, I think the ESPN NFL schedule always has links to StubHub to buy tickets, and I feel like you can always get tickets to a Rams game for less than $20.
I wonder why.
I mean, it's in a dome. Nick Foles is playing quarterback. Jeff Fisher's the head coach.
Because Jared Cook's on the ticket.
All the taps serve Bud Light. To me, it seems like a great afternoon.
Yeah, I guess I'll just pass on that, though.
Probably a good choice. And, sometime I should go to a Rams game just so I can write a blog post about it or something. I'm sure that'd get about 10 clicks. It'd be well worth the time invested. Of course, in Week 10, no Falcons, Colts, Chargers, and 49ers. They're all on bye. Good timing for the Colts as Andrew Luck's obviously going to miss some time with those kidney and abdominal issues, but no Matt Ryan, no Phillip Rivers either. So some difficult bye week pickups perhaps in some leagues. Maybe Kirk Cousins against the Saints rolling in some season-long leagues. Fantasy football just got a whole lot more interesting. In Week 10, DraftKings will be hosting yet another Millionaire Maker event with $1 million going to first place. Go to DraftKings.com now. Enter the promo code ROTOWIRE to play for free with your first deposit on DraftKings. It's promo code ROTOWIRE for a free entry now with your first deposit at DraftKings.com. This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. As we do every Friday, and a thank you to Nick Whalen, who's definitely not listening to this podcast this afternoon, this evening, this weekend. Thanks to Nick for covering for me last week while I was in Arizona. We're going to start building out our Millionaire Maker lineups, looking at each position, trying to find some value there. Tom Brady, $8,600 this week, Mario, on the road against the Giants. Should be the highest scoring game on the board, at least if the Vegas over-unders mean anything. $8,600 compared to Aaron Rodgers at $7,500. Is it worth it to pay the premium for Brady this week?
I wouldn't say that picking Brady would hurt your team, but I don't know if it's the necessary value to finish high, especially in like this tournament. But that's largely because I have a lot of faith in like Rodgers immediately below him at $7,500. That is at home against the stupid Lions who can't do anything, and Rodgers is. Rodgers, I'm sure, is not like a petty person, but he's the kind of person who would hold kind of a grudge against the world, I think, about the last 2 weeks that he's put up with. So I think the Lions are going to pay a hefty price for the irritation that Rodgers has dealt with. I love, and I'm sure it's reassuring for everybody to put money on narratives like that, but $7,500 is also cheap for Rodgers at home against the stupid Lions, everything else removed from consideration.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that you've added the stupid in front of the Lions because it is a little redundant, but I think it's necessary, and I think what Rodgers is going to do to the Lions is going to be, I mean, he did it kind of at the end of the game in Carolina. Someone showed him the last play of the game when Randall Cobb was wide open after the obvious pick. Like, there should have been a penalty for setting a pick on that play. And he looks at it on that Microsoft Surface.
And
he just whips it to the ground.
I assumed it froze on him.
Oh, no. I mean, it probably did. It's a Microsoft product. But bottom line was,
please don't kill us, Microsoft.
My Microsoft products would freeze all the time. So that's personal experience. That's all I'm saying. Rodgers, I think, showed his displeasure for that device in a way that I think he will treat the Lions the same. Like, I think he will do the exact same thing to the Lions that he did to that tablet at the end of
the
game last week.
Maybe the tablet was working great and he wasn't watching film of that play, but he just saw the Lions helmet logo. Like, he was hallucinating the logo upon it and just couldn't take the disgust.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, he just doesn't like the Lions. But, I mean, Jim Caldwell and Jim Bob Cooter, are they really going to go in there and beat the Packers for the first time at Lambeau since 91? Probably not. The only thing I hope the Lions can do is put up enough points to where Rodgers isn't handing the ball off to Starks and Lacy throughout the second half of this game. I want Rodgers to have one of those weeks where he throws it 35 times and gets you 350 yards and four TDs.
Yeah, if they're to the point where they need to like run out the clock rather than giving the ball to those two, I'd just go Bourbon Bowl. But,
yeah. Nice. I like it. Drew Brees, $7,400. Cam Newton, $7,100. Probably both worth considering. I'm not going anywhere near Carson Palmer at $6,900 going on the road to Seattle. I mean, why would you unless you want to try to steer away from what the masses are doing and get a potential low ownership QB, but he's the fifth most expensive guy on the board. Breeze has been playing very well, really for the better part of the last 5 or 6 weeks now. Had, of course, the 7-TD game against the Giants a couple of weeks back. On the road, though, kind of a different story. Do you like him against Washington?
Not really, but I'm just been wrong about Breeze the last month or so. I'm still clinging to the early season perception I have of him, which is obviously outdated at this point. I mean, well, 2 games, 10 touchdowns, that is convincing, but it is only 2 games. Either way, he's going on the road where the splits are, they speak for themselves. But yeah, like if we're going for someone in that range, like the non-Brady, non-Rodgers, I think I would just go all the way down to Eli at 67 because another convenient narrative, he's going against Tom Brady. He never loses against Tom Brady, dude.
No, he gets more motivated to play against Tom Brady than against other quarterbacks.
He tries to do well now.
Yeah, he's trying to cement his own legacy against Brady's, I'm sure. 6,700 is a good price, though, because you expect the New England offense to put up plenty of points. With that, you get lots of attempts for Manning.
Yes.
So that looks good. Andy Dalton at 6,500 is not bad. I guess the concern there is the Houston offense maybe can't keep pace with the Bengals, and you see a heavy dose of Jeremy Hill and Gio Bernard. So while
Like a good cash game option at least, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe a good tournament, though, too, because I think you're going to see a lot of people just pay up for Rodgers and Newton this week. Those are the two guys that I feel like are going to be pretty heavily owned at the quarterback position, because Tennessee, even though they've played well in a handful of games this year, and maybe the things that were going wrong for them with Ken Wisenhunt will start to go right now that he's out of the picture. 7,000 for Cam Newton at Tennessee looks pretty nice.
Yeah, the soup can is a better coach than Ken Wisenhunt, and I think Malarkey is even more qualified than a soup can.
Malarkey is a word that I feel like my grandmother used to use for
malarkey.
Garbage.
Yeah,
like,
malarkey, not moo.
Like, you're full of crap. Like, she'd just say, that's malarkey.
Yep. Mularkey is the coach. Mularkey is Ken Wisenhunt.
Huh.
If that makes any sense.
Sort of. Now my mind's starting to separate.
Mularkey, Ken Wisenhunt. But Mularkey is the current head coach.
Spelling, yeah. Like my grandma's expression is spelled with an A, but the coach is spelled with a U.
Exactly.
Now I follow. I'm a little slow. It was a big greasy lunch today. Peyton Manning, 6,200. No thanks. Home against the Chiefs. He's averaging 14.3 fantasy points per game on DraftKings this season. So I'm going to go ahead and steer away from that. I do think Russell Wilson at 5,900 is a solid tournament option. Arizona's defense isn't bad, but Wilson's had a couple good games against them. His last 2 meetings against them, he runs a lot against the Cards. We'll see if that holds up.
That might be. I'm guessing they do a lot of man coverage, if only because of the legend of Patrick Peterson. And man coverage is where Wilson will kill you, because if you're running downfield with receivers instead of looking back at the backfield in your zones, he's tough to contain.
Yeah, so that might be the secret there as far as Russell Wilson goes. What do you think about Derek Carr at 5,800? That Minnesota defense is at least average and probably better than average, but Carr averaging more than 20 points per game this season on DraftKings, 5,800. He's at home. Is this a good spot to go?
In a GPP, I think it's worth firing up because, again, that Minnesota linebacker duo of Kendricks and Barr is beat up. Barr is a crucial pass rusher in that scheme. So if he's limited, it sounds like they'll both play, or at least Barr seems like he'll play. He practiced limited, I think, today. But yeah, those two beat up, and Xavier Rhodes is like the new Mario Edwards of the NFL. They're just throwing flags at him all the time. So Carr has shown the ability to produce against like the best defenses he's faced this year, Denver aside. But on the other hand, he hasn't really seen any good defenses, so we'll see. But yeah, Carr is very convincing. Love the receiver combo of Cooper and Crabtree is looking great. If Murray's playing, that's a little more insurance too. I probably am not going to pick him this week. I picked him last week and felt like I dodged a bullet with those touchdowns coming in to save the day. But yeah, I'd probably go to Bortles at 5,600 in this range as my favorite option.
Lisp was trying to push Sam Bradford on me during the XM show today. I mean, he's 5,700. Again, a lot of points expected in the Eagles-Dolphins game. Do you buy the idea that maybe the Eagles, with all the new personnel they brought in this offseason, would take a half season to start to click offensively, and that maybe in the second half of the season, they're going to start to resemble the offense we expected them to be all along?
It totally makes sense. It's just that I don't know how much... definitely some of the regression in that offense is just the rest of the NFL knowing who Chip Kelly is now, because it's not like Nick Foles had a whole year and a half to learn. That first year where he came in and threw 27 touchdowns to 2 interceptions, Bradford's got 10 of each of those after 8 games. So seems like there's also the personnel is worse than it was back then. But yeah, not just that it's new personnel. It's like the worst personnel, teams knowing the scheme a little bit. But with that said, I mean, if the tempo is right and the matchup is right, even, you know, crap performance from Bradford can equal a good one in fantasy. So I wouldn't rule it out, especially with, I mean, the Dolphins have kind of been in like wacky games all year where it's like somebody's blowing out somebody. So maybe one of the quarterbacks in that game will have an amazing game and the other will throw for like 40 yards or whatever.
41-10 Eagles, perhaps. And I have to wonder, too, if Chip Kelly is a card-carrying member of the Magician's Alliance. Like, is he a part of that?
I don't think he believes in magic. I think he wouldn't call it magic if it existed. He would have some kind of like scientific alternate term for it, because he's like all about, you know, spreadsheets or whatever.
Yeah, he does seem to be the big data coach, but kind of interested to see or figure out how exactly he made Nick Foles what he was in 2013.
I think it's because he collected more urine samples back then. Like ever since guys have been weird about the urine samples, they've obviously fallen off for that reason.
So Nick Foles, without question, was like, "Yeah, you want some of my pee, bro? Sure." And then
he got the necessary hydration as dictated by the spreadsheet, and then threw 27 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. And now everybody's like, "Chip, stop asking for that stuff, man."
So in Philly, Nick Foles, very well hydrated. In St. Louis, Foles is drinking Bud Light for breakfast or something and just super dehydrated.
It turns out I didn't think through this theory. I bet it didn't really have much to do with anything. I think it just took the league by surprise from the tempo, and everybody else was so poorly conditioned on defense that they just got really tired against them.
Yeah, it's probably an Occam's razor sort of thing. But a couple more names to throw at you here. Marcus Mariota, 5,300. Not bad against Carolina. Defense
He's
is
awesome.
Good, but Mariota's a good player.
He's
a good
awesome.
Price.
I don't think people are talking about enough how awesome he is, but I hate the matchup, so I won't be picking him.
Fair enough. The one TD pass he threw to Delanie Walker last week should have been a pick. Two Saints defenders collided. Ball popped up off their shoulder.
Like, Walker, he didn't know that was going to happen. Come on. It was intentional. He knew with the. He was just trying to make them look like a bunch. He tried to make like a Monty Python touchdown or something.
Yeah, it worked. It looked like a Monty Python touchdown. Mm-hmm. Matthew Stafford at 5,400. If you buy into the idea of the Packers putting up a lot of points this week, which seems easy, Stafford getting a lot of attempts also makes a lot of sense. Is that a good price at 5,400?
It would have to be in garbage time. I am not convinced that that team can compete with anybody right now.
Can we say the words garbage time anymore, or does Katie Nolan have that trademarked?
I don't know the reference there. I know Katie Nolan, who
that's
that
her
is.
Show. It's called Garbage Time.
Oh, are we going to get sued now?
Probably.
Well, that was lowercase garbage time for the ref. And if the show is two words, I made a new one that is a single word and still lowercase, so there's no confusion here.
Real quick sidebar. Do you watch BoJack Horseman on Netflix?
No, but I might eventually.
You might like that show. And there's a scene where they have a banner hanging up, and one of the characters is Mr. Peanut Butter.
I've actually seen a little bit of it, so I'm familiar with the general surrealist nature of it.
Perfect. Well, so they must call in to order the banner at some point, which isn't part of the show, but you see this banner and it says, "Congratulations, Mr. Peanut Butter and Diane." And it also underneath that says, "Peanut Butter is one word, do not write this." And it was like all printed on the banner, because that's just how life is. You know, people just don't follow directions, and they would just take everything you say literally and print all of it on the banner.
Well, now I won't do that.
But yeah, Peanut Butter, definitely not one word outside of BoJack Horseman. I think it's a funny show. It's got its own unique feel to it, to say the least. Last quarterback I want to ask you about, Kirk Cousins. I, on principle, we'll never own Kirk Cousins. I want to fade him everywhere, every week, all the time. And fading him most of the time isn't really even a strategy. It's just a way of life. This week, people like him a lot at 5,200 because he's home and he's against the Saints defense, which is awful. 5,200 on Kirk Cousins. Are you doing it?
No. If I'm going in this range, it's going to be Bortles for me, because I think Bortles can be a good player, and I know he's got good receivers, and I know he's playing. Well, I think I'm still going with Ravens defense worse than Saints, but we'll see. Maybe I'll get burned for this. Like, Kirk Cousins is just a nemesis to me more than a fantasy consideration.
Yeah, I saw him on the Dan Patrick show the last year he was at Michigan State. They had him on as a guest, and they asked him to sing that. Remember that song called Friday by Rebecca Black that showed up for a while, and she had to like leave school because everyone was bullying her, which really sucks.
You can bully rich kids?
Wow. Apparently you can.
That must have been a very rich school where they overruled their own rich kids. Okay, never mind. I get it.
But nevertheless, he was singing that song on the Dan Patrick Show. And from that moment, I can't get on board with Kirk Cousins. I can't take him seriously. It's the same thing that happened with Nick Foles. There was some ESPN show back when Foles was finishing up at Arizona. They had a bunch of four quarterbacks in, and they were trying to throw a football through, I don't know, like a tire 20 yards away or into a garbage can, and Foles couldn't do it. And I just thought, there's no way this guy can be a good quarterback in the NFL.
I think that's totally reasonable. You got to throw it through the tire.
If you can't do that, how are you going to read a defense and hit a moving target?
You can't read a tire, my man. Try 11 defenders.
Maybe the Bud Light problem was happening then, too. By the way, no like actual legs to the Nick Foles drinks beer before games or anything. It's just a theory that the dehydration has been a problem for him since he left Philadelphia. Moving on to the running backs for the three of you who are still listening. Todd Gurley leading the way at 7,300, home against the Bears. Chalky, but probably pretty good play because I don't think the Bears can do a whole lot against that St. Louis defense, especially if Alshon Jeffrey is banged up or possibly absent. You got Adrian Peterson at 7,100 against Oakland. That seems pretty good as well. Forte, if he goes, is 6,800. Too risky for me. I'm just going to walk away from him right now. Marshawn Lynch at 67. I'm a little concerned now with that abdominal injury. And then you got D'Angelo Williams at 6,500. Of those five, though, I think I like D'Angelo Williams the most because Cleveland has been a sieve against the run all season long.
I think my favorite of that group is Adrian Peterson, but I can't really justify it with, I can justify it with a little data. Like his red zone attempt volume has been lagging this year, and I feel like he's due for a situation where he corrects the average. But if Derek Carr has a really good game, then my Peterson pick is crap, probably, or at least unremarkable. But yeah, I definitely understand the D'Angelo Williams thinking. I'm just slightly worried about Landry Jones being so awful that they stack the run and keep him to a reasonable box score that someone like Mark Ingram or somebody else in the I would definitely prefer DeMarco Murray at 6,200 over any of those guys for what it's worth.
I was surprised at the ownership rates on DeMarco Murray when I saw them come out last week after those games started. It was pretty low for a guy going up against Dallas, but in a revenge game, no less. But it was a favorable matchup at a good price. I mean, that was the key to Murray.
We know that the narrative of Eagles terrible forever, no hope, is stronger than the narrative of former team.
I would just think if you graphed out the Eagles ownership rates from the season, it'd be insane.
45 in week one.
Yeah, it'd be like broken off the page in week one, week two, maybe week three, and then you'd see like this sharp slope down.
It's like the number of dinosaurs that live than the asteroid, and that's like
exactly.
Yeah,
the Eagles are the dinosaurs, or their ownership rate at least are the dinosaurs, which is a great way to visualize that. I do like Murray at 6,200. I'm not crazy about Justin Forsett at 6,000, but I never really am. Doug Martin at 5,600 interests me against Dallas, though. I think last week the light volume was a little bit of a fluke with Martin.
Yeah, I mean, they like Charles Sims a lot, and the fumble is always a legitimate reason to bench a player forever, but I think they'll go back to him. They have reason to let him play well this year, if only so they can get like a decent compensatory pick if somebody signs him in free agency. But yeah, at home, Romo's not back, so the Dallas offense probably sucks still, or at least isn't so good that they can truly pull away. This should actually be a pretty close game with a good number of points scored, I think. So I do like Martin at 5,600, and I like most of the players a little bit, a little bit anyway.
Yeah, I saw the point spread earlier. It's not much. I think it's one or
there's no
two
defense in this game, but it's like you got Dez Bryant and Mike Evans in this game, but no defenses. Like, that's pretty much all I need to hear.
Seems like a good time to use at least one of Mike Evans and Dez Bryant. We'll think about that once we get to the receivers. Lamar Miller, 5,400 against the Eagles. That's a pretty good price for a guy that's really played at a high level since Dan Campbell took over as the Dolphins head coach.
Yeah, I don't know what to think of this one. The Eagles' run defense has done well, but as we've seen, Miller is a really good pass catcher, and man, he's had some huge games recently. I probably won't pick him that much, but 5,400 I think is an objectively good projected value for a player with his recent usage and his the explosiveness he's demonstrated throughout his whole career.
The rest of the season, would you rather have Lamar Miller or Devontae Freeman?
Oh man, that is a tough question. I would say Devontae, just because I feel like there's fewer concerns about his surrounding team. But Lamar Miller is the better player, in my opinion.
Weird thing about the Dolphins is that they seem to be interested in getting Jay Ajayi more carries. And it's not because I don't like Jay Ajayi.
Jay Ajayi is good, man.
It's a fear of Lamar Miller. I had a fear of Lamar Miller going into the season. I didn't want him. I was price enforcing in Stopa League. Turned down that Brady offer for him early, like before the season even started, like an idiot in a two-quarterback league. Was miserable with Lamar Miller for a few weeks. Joe Philbin finally gets fired. Lamar Miller looks awesome, and now I'm afraid to trade him away. I need to go trade Lamar Miller. I need to stop the podcast and go trade away Lamar Miller as soon as I can, because Jay Ajayi's coming.
Yeah, I mean, Jay Ajayi does have that arthritic knee that everybody's worried about, but I mean, in the meantime, if he can play like he did last week, it's like, how are you going to keep that guy off the field? He's good. But Lamar Miller is really good, too. I mean, let's be clear. He's really good. This should have been what's been going on the last 2 years if they weren't so stupid on that organization.
You know what seems like a good thing for an arthritic knee is only having to play half the season. That seems like a good thing for an arthritic knee. Just throwing that out there.
You can finish strong when a DVR Lamar Miller team is trying to make the playoff push.
I'll let everybody know if I trade Lamar Miller, because he'll go like top three the rest of the season if I get rid of him. Like I'm always wrong on Lamar Miller, so trust me, this can only get worse. Jeremy Hill, 5,300 against Houston. Nah, not really interested there. I like James Starks a little bit at 4,900, though. Because
really quickly, sorry. Jeremy Hill has been amazingly bad this year. 344 yards on 104 carries. That's like 3.1. I don't get it. Anyway.
That's like Trent Richardson level.
Yeah, it's crazy. He's so bad right now. It makes no sense to me. Anyway, moving on.
Starks at 4,900 is pretty interesting. I don't buy Mike McCarthy's breakdown of his backfield beyond this week. I think Eddie Lacy is always going to look the way he looks. I don't think he's gained weight. I don't think he's chunky.
Dude, I think he's gained weight. Like, he has gained weight from his Alabama days at the very least. Like, he's like 20, 25 pounds bigger.
Right, but he's been that since he arrived in Green Bay, it seems like. That
I thought
he looked
like another 8 to 10 pounds this year, personally. Like, he's got, like, if at the very least, we have to say before this year he was trying to suck in his gut a bit, because, like, right now he is not trying. He's just letting it drop.
I think the well-trained camera people in the Green Bay area are just waiting for him to exhale every time, and he's one of those guys that just takes good deep breaths in and long exhales, and that's why everything just gets pushed out.
He's basically like Randy in Trailer Park Boys right now. It's out of hand.
Do you think that's a better show than Venture Brothers?
No, but very totally different. There's no comparison just in terms of the overall method there.
Yeah, I was just saying, if I had basically the bandwidth to watch one, you know, which woman should I go with?
Trailer Park Boys will hit you faster, but Venture Brothers takes some investment to like understand the uniqueness of it, and it's self-reference type stuff. But Venture Brothers is a better show. Venture Brothers is like the best thing ever, pretty much.
All right, I got to get into Curb Your Enthusiasm still too. I've saved that, which is amazing. As a Seinfeld guy, I love Seinfeld.
You're gonna like that show a lot.
Never went into Curb, and I that's my winter. Like this stupid winter we're about to have, where it's probably -10 degrees.
You're gonna like it so much, it's just gonna be your like half winter. You're not gonna go through the whole winter.
You think I'll burn through it before the end of the year?
You'll get through it in like a month.
Yeah, so maybe at Christmas time I'll have to ask for something else. Well, hopefully
use some vacation time to watch Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Santa Claus has been just completely hosing me for 30 years. So hopefully you're 31. Is better, but I gotta get through Curb. Darren McFadden, you're one of your heroes.
I'm using him.
4,900.
Not a question. He's gonna be in every one of them.
All
every
of
single
them.
One. Yeah.
LeGarrette Blount at 4,900 too. Do you
probably
like?
Probably gonna be in like a third of them.
9,800 for a nice backfield tandem.
I might have to go higher than that for Blount. Like he's a pretty good fit on that team. And what are they gonna do? Give it to somebody else? I don't know.
No, they will not. TJ Yeldon and Charkhandrick West, both at 4,800. Then you got Gio Bernard at 4,700, inexplicably still cheaper than Jeremy Hill. Is there a point where he's ever going to pass Jeremy Hill in his DraftKings salary?
I don't think so, because I think they have like a volatility variable or something. And if you look before last week, there was a 1-carry game, an 8-carry game. Maybe it's like if you have a standard deviation that's too high, you just kind of get like a cutoff figure and like you can't get over 5,000 unless the deviation drops, or at least there's a ratio of deviation to the per game fantasy point average or something. But yeah, I mean, as cheap as he is, I'm not going to pick him. I hate trying to figure out that backfield.
That offense as a whole, it's difficult to know who exactly is going to go
there's
off
a lot
in a given
of
week because there's so many good weapons. But Charcandrick West, as much as we like at Son of Bum's defense, I mean, their vulnerability is the run. And if the Chiefs are going to hang around in this game, they're going to have to move the chains, grind out the clock, and do it that way. So, I mean, is Charcandrick West at 4,800 kind of a good, I don't want to say under the radar play, but a guy that you can go after at a fair price who simply may not have that many people on him because the matchup on at first glance looks like a tough matchup.
Yeah, those are all fair points, and he did have a good game against Pittsburgh, whose run defense has been pretty good. I don't know about playing at Mile High, though, and even with Aqib Talib out, that Denver secondary has this cornerback personnel to just shut down Macklin or whatever else they got going, and I don't know that they need to pay attention to the pass whatsoever, so I won't be picking Charcandrick West, but he seems like a good bet for 20 carries. It's just I'm worried about it being like 70 yards or something.
So for everybody who I've seen on Twitter or heard on podcast, radio, wherever, who were all over Kirk Cousins this week, Shane Vereen has probably twice as many people who want a piece. 4,300 on DraftKings. The thinking there, I think, is that the Giants will have to dump it off a lot with Manning throwing it 35 to 40 times.
No, dude, it's a revenge game.
That's why people actually like it. It has nothing to do with the tactics. It has nothing to do with the game flow. It is 100% revenge. This is a revenge-driven media frenzy that we live in right now.
I mean, to be fair, he is like the second best receiver on that team.
Yeah, and that's an indictment of the lack of talent of Reuben Randall.
Right, that and the lack of patellar tendon in Victor Cruz's knee.
Which is disappointing, because yeah. I liked Victor Cruz, when he had
really
the patellar
good.
Tendon. He was a fun player.
Yeah, Jermaine Crowell didn't come back from that. I don't really have my hopes up for Victor, but Victor was great, but when it lasted at least.
Well, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on the pod. We miss you on the field, but if you know we can't get you back on the field, we'd love to chat with you on the pod. Jonathan Stewart, 4,300, always cheap. I mean, I could see Carolina holding a lead in that game and the volume being there again. I like Jonathan Stewart every week, and it seems like in season long, I'm higher on him than most. I know we worry about the bookshelf getting his share of carries around the goal line. Then we worry about Cam Newton getting some touches, getting some goal line runs too, but Jonathan Stewart at 4,300 seems like he's about $1,000 underpriced again this week.
I agree with that. And when you watch him play, like, it sucks to tackle him. Like, it would look like it would really suck to have to tackle him. So even though his totals might not impress, like, he looks better. Like, all of his yards are tough. The offense basically, like, other than Cam, obviously, it runs through him and, like, the beating that he takes in the middle of the field to open up the outside parts. But I don't think I'm going to pick him this week. It's stupid, though, because like, if you believe that Tennessee has no chance in this game, then you would expect Stewart to at least get, like, you know, run out the clock carries. But otherwise, and like in this range, like I would almost prefer Antonio Andrews in that game at 3,700, just because Andrews can catch passes at least. Not that they've used him that much in that role, but he can catch a lot of passes in terms of skill set. And he somehow keeps having these good rushing games, which makes no sense to me because he ran like a 4.85, but whatever. Anyway, yeah, I'm probably not going to make any room for either of those guys too much since McFadden and Blount are so cheap anyway. But it's hard to argue against the logic of using either one.
Anything in the $3,500 or $3,000 price range at running back that you're thinking about this week? Maybe someone who's going to play a little more because of an
Ryan
injury.
Matthews is $3,500. That's really cheap.
Yeah, that is good. It's just like,
I'm probably not going to go after that, but I think in GPP it's pretty easy to argue that it makes sense. And Charles Sims, I think there's room for both him and Doug Martin to have good games there, especially if Sims gets something going as a receiver, which is his only like really unique skill. I don't think he's a very good runner, but either way, like, those guys are so cheap, who knows. I'm not gonna go with any of them, though. Is Alfred Morris just like not a player anymore?
He's a ghost. He's gone.
Wow.
It's over.
I didn't notice because I didn't care, but yeah, wow, 10 carries. I guess that's why it's 3,300. No, I'm not interested in any of those players, really.
Looking at the receiver pool, you got Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham at the top, $8,800 each. If Ben Roethlisberger does somehow play, and we should know hopefully before kickoff on that, I would think that if he's not going to play, he'd be potentially inactive. But nevertheless, if Roethlisberger goes, do you just go ahead and plug Brown in last minute? Because it seems like he's gotten the best of the Browns, even when Joe Hayden has been healthy and more like the Joe Hayden we've seen for the better part of his career.
That would make a lot of sense to pick him if Roethlisberger's in. If Roethlisberger's out, you would be crazy to pick him because Odell Beckham against the Patriots at home, 8,800. I don't have to think about, there's no coin is necessary for flipping in this particular case. But yeah, if Roethlisberger's out, I'm not considering him at all.
Are you anchoring on Beckham, Hopkins at 8,700, Edelman at 82, Bryant at 78?
I haven't tried to fit in the receivers yet in my lineup, but I'm tempted by Dez at 7,800. I'm tempted Mike Evans at 60. I'm going all in on Evans probably this week because I'm sure people are going to look. I think it would be entirely wrong to look at the six drops thing as a reason to not pick Evans. I think it's a reason to just like go crazy all in on him. Because if he's dropping six passes and still doing that, especially when you combine the fact that he doesn't have a history of dropping passes, it just shows that like he has an enormous role in that offense and he can still put up a huge box score even if he has the worst game of his life.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you there. I'm thinking about AJ Green at 76. I'm thinking about Kelvin Johnson at 7,500. Not going to go with either one of the Denver receivers unless Emmanuel Sanders is ruled out. If that happens, I think Demaryius probably gets bumped into my lineup ahead of Kelvin and ahead of AJ Green because yeah. I'd expect another four or five targets to go his way.
For sure, yeah. If Sanders is out, that's pretty big for Thomas because at 7,400, that's very affordable for someone of his skill level who would at that target volume he would have in that case.
I do like Evans, though, at 6,800. You got Allen Robinson and Randall Cobb at 6,700. Oof. That's pretty tempting.
Allen Robinson.
Amari Cooper is only 6,800. Do you worry about the matchup against Xavier Rhodes, or do you figure that the... Well, because here's the thing. It's not like Cooper gets the yardage when Rhodes gets called for a million penalties. Like that's the downside to that matchup and Rhodes getting constantly flagged.
Right, but it would give an incentive to go back at him the next play. I don't think it changes anything for me for Cooper. I think he's a pretty close to, unless he's going against like a Revis or the Seahawks type of situation. I'm just not really worried about the matchup for him because I think he's shown, excuse me, that he's an above average starting NFL receiver right now. In the way that team is built, they have to make him part of the game plan every week. So if Carr doesn't tank, I don't think Cooper will. I don't think there's a scenario where Carr can have a good game and Cooper doesn't.
Matthews is 6,200. Cooks is 6,000. I think Michael Crabtree at 5,800 is still pretty interesting because it seems like he's the player that the Niners drafted several years ago as opposed to the guy that left San Francisco after last season, really kind of doing a nice job resurrecting his career.
He does look good.
In Oakland. So I think that's a fair price for him. Jeremy Maclin at 5,500, not going to happen this week. I think I'm staying away from Hearns because there's enough other guys I like where even if he's active, that injury is enough to where I'm not going to use him in this daily setting. DeSean Jackson's kind of interesting to me as a tournament play at 5,400, even though I don't really like Cousins. And the reason why I like Jackson is it sounds like he was able to do a bit more in practice. We talked earlier about how the Saints defense really is the worst in the league, most generous to opposing passers so far this year. What do you think about Jackson as a tournament play?
It's hard to argue against, but yeah, it's also hard to make an argument for, given that he hasn't really played this year. It's not in my nature to go after the player like him. If he was like below 5,000, I'd probably think a lot harder about it. But in the meantime, it's like I can't convince myself to take a DeSean Jackson over, like, for instance, Tavon Austin at 4,800 or even Pierre Garçon at 4,800. But yeah, I actually am getting on the Tavon Austin hype train. I never thought I'd be here, but here I am.
It's a strange place to be. Stephon Diggs, 5,100 against the Raiders. Coming off a disappointing game, but I kind of like that price on him if you want to save a little money for that second or third receiver spot. I think he's probably the third most famous Stephon behind Stephon Marbury and Stephon Urkel.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't know who one of those is, but I was going to say, if Sean Hill is starting, who's the backup in Minnesota? I don't even know this.
Sean Hill.
Oh, okay. Oh,
I was shocked to see him playing last week when Bridgewater
got knocked
out of that
game. That was so cynical of me to just assume Sean Hill was the backup quarterback for some NFC North team.
He always is.
Yeah, but anyway, so if he's in, I would not consider that really a down vote, perhaps, or even a downgrade, if you will, for Stephon Diggs, just because Bridgewater hasn't been that good this year, and it seems like the targets for Diggs are based on the scheme. Like they're funneling targets to him because North Turner is not a stupid coach, and he knows where his best players are.
I probably should spend more time on Reddit at some point.
But, don't.
Why not? What's the downside at this point?
I mean, everything. You could lose everything.
I could lose all
of it. I don't know. Never mind. I'm not going to.
The closet with the Greg Jennings fat head, I could lose all of it. Golden Tate, 4,600. Sort of interesting, but I'm passing over him because Devontae Adams is 4,200. I like that quite a bit. Brandon LaFell is 4,100.
Yeah, LaFell and Adams. I'm getting sour on Adams as a prospect, but his role getting targets from Aaron Rodgers, that speaks for itself. At 4,200, I'm going after that.
I'm not ready to say he's Marcus Wheaton 2.0 yet. I saw that scroll by my timeline. It's like, that's a pretty big insult.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that. Anyway, if...
No, do you want to?
No. Brandon LaFell, though, I was actually just saying on the radio show that I was talking on, like, I actually like his chances for kind of a breakout game, too. Like, he kind of already had one last week, but he's getting he's got 24 targets in those first three games back. Tom Brady is the quarterback. 8 targets from Tom Brady is like a safe, you know, 72 yard, half of a touchdown projection, and he hasn't scored a touchdown on 11 catches yet. I like his chances in this week. So Adams and LaFell are both players worth building around, in my opinion.
Yeah, I might have both in a couple of lineups.
Yeah, that's like a totally good wide receiver 2-3 tandem, I think.
The preliminary look, that seems like a great way to go about it, because it's going to open up some money at other positions. Anything else you'd like at the receiver position? Some cheaper options here? I mean, Michael Floyd's kind of against the grain this week at 3,800 against Seattle. 3,900 on Ruben Randall's not bad. I don't like Ruben Randall enough, but that's actually a good spot at a good price.
He's really bad. Only players at this range I would look at are let me see. Green Beckham is 3,200. He got 10 targets last week, and it seems like the team has reason to make that happen again. Obviously, the matchup is awful, but on the other hand, let me see something real quick. Kendall Wright is out, so maybe he will get Josh Norman. Never mind. I don't know. It's a GPP only thing, but Dorial Green Beckham, and I don't know, maybe like Jamison Crowder if you're really desperate or something.
Cole Beasley, 3,000 coming off a big game.
Wait, Cole Beasley is 3,000?
He's 3,000.
Everyone knows I do not like Cole Beasley as a player, but man, that is pretty tempting. 9 catches last week. Oof. Was he hurt the weeks before that, or was he just really bad? Like, he didn't catch a pass for 2 weeks. I'm not picking Cole Beasley. I'm not going to do it.
Looking at that game log, can't really get on board. Let's take a quick look at the tight end position. Gronk, 8,000. It's really been a long time since Gronk gronked all over the place, and it seems like this would be a good spot for him to do it.
Yeah, I agree. I look at Gronk the opposite of the way I do most players. Like, if I pick Gronk and I don't get a huge game, I double down the next week for sure. Whereas the rest of the time I am irrationally like bitter about it and pick players who are less likely to do well. I'm going to try to make room for him. 8,000 is not easy when there's my man Gary Barnage at 4,800, for instance, and Kelsey at 4,800 I like. Who knows? Do we like Jordan Reed if they're going against the worst defense of all time out there?
I do. Even though I don't like Kirk Cousins, I do like Jordan Reed at 4,600. Kind of player that you really get frustrated with in season long because of the propensity for injury, but in a daily context, you got to like that there are probably, 10 tight ends that cost more than Reed this week or 9?
He's got to be like a top 7 tight end right now, right?
Yeah, he's
PPR anyway.
He should probably cost more like 5,100, and that he costs 4,600, I think, is a really nice discount. If you want to go super cheap at tight end,
there's a bunch of good tight end options.
What about Kyle Rudolph against the Raiders? They've had some trouble covering tight ends this year. Only 3,000. If you just want to kind of go against the grain, GPP, save some money, 3,000 on Kyle Rudolph doesn't seem that bad.
Yeah, I mean, him, I would really consider. I like Benjamin Watson at 4,300. Like, he's a part of that offense. Like, he's just a part of it. I don't worry about the fluke factor with him. Eric Ebron at 3,300 is kind of interesting. Keith Miller is always a little bit interesting, but I'm probably gonna go mostly with Barnage, I guess, just because I'm just totally sold on Barnage.
So I was thinking about going for defense is just going Broncos and not even thinking about it. They're 3,400. The Cardinals are 3,900. Rams are 3,600 home against the Bears. Seahawks are 3,500. So the Broncos are the fourth most expensive defense. They're home against Kansas City. I know there's no Talib, but Denver should still be good enough to get to Alex Smith, you know, 4 or 5 sacks, a pick, maybe a defensive or a special teams TD. Should I just use the Broncos this week? Is there someone else that you like matchup-wise who I should consider instead?
I'll probably have to think hard about picking the Packers, actually, because I think Matt Stafford is awful. And I think the defense of the Packers, while not good, I think it in certain situations can at least be opportunistic, both in the pass rush and pass defense. I'm not worried about the Detroit running game undoing the Packers, and I'm really not worried about Stafford doing that. So I'm going to have to think about that. Otherwise, I mean, it makes sense to just go for the Broncos because they're just so reliable. It's not as if they're going against a good team or anything. They're at home. I'm not worried about Tlaib being suspended.
Two more last-minute updates here. Ben Roethlisberger, even though he's officially listed as questionable, according to, I believe that's Jerry Dulock, like the town in Shrek, he's from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, suggests that Roethlisberger has no chance of playing in the contest, which...
Sounds like a sober man.
Sounds like a man who's really, really sad about the state of things in Pittsburgh for this week. So, I don't know. I mean, you could take that with the appropriate grain of salt. If he really had no chance of playing, the Steelers would probably have listed him as out. But
really? I don't know.
Gamesmanship or whatever. So, looks like it's going to be Landry Jones for the Steelers. Adjust your expectations for the Steelers' offense accordingly. It's kind of what we've been expecting all week, but just it looks like maybe a smokescreen from the Steelers as far as that questionable tag goes. John Brown, still slowed by a hamstring injury. He's listed as questionable for Sunday's game in Seattle. You know, I mentioned Michael Floyd as a cheap receiver option. If Brown doesn't play, you know, you have Fitz out there. Do you think more about Floyd because you don't have three guys trying to chop up targets against a great Seattle defense?
Yeah, and I don't imagine that Richard Sherman would see that much of Floyd.
You'd probably see Fitz.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I got to do some reading on how they do their cornerback alignments, but. If Brown is out, but I don't think we're going to hear anything confirmation wise on that because everybody
Sunday night.
Everybody thought he was going to play last week too, and he just didn't. Bruce Arians just did what college coaches do every single week with their players, where they just he'll play, man, and he's just not there,
and then dropped a tough bleep I think on fantasy owners when people asked him about it.
Oh yeah. So anyway, I'm not gonna go after those Arizona guys, any of them.
No, I'm kind of staying away from that game as a whole because I expect it to be very low scoring. I could see that one being like 14-3 Seattle or something. If, again, maybe Russell Wilson is a GPP or something. If that game gets to like 20-10 or 20-13, but I'm just not expecting a lot of offense between the Seahawks and Cardinals. Thank you for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use the promo code RotoWire when you make your deposit for a free contest entry today. Also, check out RotoWire for free for the next 10 days by going to RotoWire.com/pod. The RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast will return on Monday.